investor's version, it just allows people to get an instant answer instead of wondering, now, how much is this property really going to cost me? And it teaches people to look past the $500,000 mark and look at the bottom line, which might only be $40 or $50 a week.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're keeping the conversation going with founder of Summersoft, Jan Summers. She'll disclose her strategy for buying property with no need for a deposit and discuss how Summersoft can help you purchase a property, even by simply putting aside $50 a week. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. So, what held Summers back from investing in more properties?
The idea that you need a lot of money to make a lot more money. We had, even when we had a few properties, and we were absolutely cash strapped, because not only did we have principal and interest loans, they were principal and interest loans taken over 10 years, not 30 years. That was the bank's philosophy back then. They wanted their money back ASAP. And so we were busy trying to pay off properties at the rate of knots. We never had any money. We never had any cash. We had a lot of equity. And the idea of borrowing was probably instilled from the family, who thought that borrowing money for anything was a big no-no. So it took that real estate agent back in Sydney back in 1983 to set a train of thought in my mind, but it took a few more years to really bite the bullet to say, we can borrow money, and now I've got the hang of it, I'm going to borrow a lot of money.
Summers also believes the worst thing you can do is buy consumer goods.
The cars and the boats and the big TVs. So we need to be careful that, yes, borrowing money is a good thing and it's okay to buy something that is going to appreciate in value. But cars and boats and TVs, they're all going to depreciate. And in 10 years, you've got to ask yourself, like, what have I got to show for what I've just borrowed? And in most cases, you've got nothing to show and you've still got a big debt.
And that's scary.
Unless you bought property, because most people just borrow frivolously to support a lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's people out there who have got a lot of property as well, but they borrow against that property to be able to live a lifestyle. What's your belief, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, they're not alone. I'd say very conservatively, half the world is about supporting a lifestyle. And to me, I have very simple tastes, but I don't need to have a flashy car. My car is a 12-year-old Beamer that I bought even secondhand, and I don't need the latest car. So borrowing to buy money for frivolous things might show you off as the wealthiest person right now, but you're not. Underneath, you're not. So the appearance of wealth doesn't necessarily follow that you are wealthy.
So how do you change your thinking? How do you condition your mindset to accept the risks of property investment? And how do you even go from procrastination to active investing?
Well, I think you just need to rethink debt. You never, ever borrow for cars, TVs, credit cards. I don't make the banks a lot of money at all through my credit card. I pay mine off well before the due date. I never pay interest on credit cards, except when occasionally I've forgotten or it's been an oversight. But that's where banks make their money. That's where retail stores make their money, on credit cards that go over because people are too busy trying to support that lifestyle. And you've got to change that strategy that, okay, you don't have to go to St. Vinny's like I did for a long time. You don't have to wear secondhand things and buy secondhand clothes, but you do need to have a mindset that you can't continue to borrow beyond your means. Unless, of course, you're buying for an appreciating asset, and then you're just burying the money into a loan. Actually, having a loan is a great way to save money because it forces you to put money into it only if you've got something to show for what you have at the end of that time, like a property.
As a cash-strapped teacher and mother, how did Summers manage to juggle all her responsibilities with the high cost of living in Australia?
Well, I had very simple tastes, and we did borrow a lot of money. In the 80s, I was probably buying 4 or 5 properties a year, sometimes even every few months. And to borrow these enormous amounts of money with a principal and interest loan was exorbitant. But the key to it came when I had spent the time to talk to a lot of lenders. They were, I didn't exactly have a mentor, but I learned a lot from making a lot of phone calls, which you can do when you're a stay-at-home mum. I made a lot of phone calls, and I finally discovered what an interest-only loan was. Not an interest-free, it's an interest-only where you only pay the interest. And immediately, if you're only paying the interest on a $500,000 loan today, if you're only paying the interest at 5%, you're paying $25,000 in interest. Now, if that was a principal and interest loan, you'd probably have to pay $50,000 a year. Mm. So converting from all our loans from principal and interest to interest only made a huge difference to that cash flow. I started out skimping and saving, and I thought, we cannot go on like this forever. It was still viable, but this made a huge difference in discovering what interest-only loans, which came about at the end of the 80s with the deregulation of the financial market.
Oh, okay. It's funny because I was born in early 80s and I'm still still thinking back to it going, I didn't realize that it was not possible back then, because I know nowadays there is very much a lot of talk that says just get it on interest only, specifically for investment properties. So back then, was it compulsory then that you had to pay
principal? Yes, you had not only needed a principal and interest loan. In the late 70s and early 80s when we were buying, you not only had to take a principal and interest loan, it was usually over the shortest term possible of about 10 years. And not only that, you needed to have about 25% cash deposit for that next house.
Wow.
So they were the three things that made you cash poor, was that you had a principal and interest loan, so your payback was enormous. You needed to save for a deposit for the next property at the same time, or so we thought you did.
Mm.
And it really made a huge impact in switching to interest only and not having to save a deposit in the late 80s with the deregulation of the market.
And what was the interest rate back in then?
Well, it started out at a normal rate, which was about 7 or 8%, and with the collapse of the share market in 87 and property investment took off in about 88, 89, that's when property virtually doubled in value from 50 to 100,000. There was probably a lot of cowboys in the industry who said, well, now we can borrow zillions, and they poured it into developments, and it went on and on and on, and Keating came in and said, well, this has got to stop.
Mm.
And interest rates went to about 20%.
One part of Summer's strategy is to always fix interest rates on loans to lower the risk of a variable rate skyrocketing and taking your money with it.
And that's one of the reasons I always fix interest rates at the moment, because we lived through that. But we lived through it with fixed rate loans. And so I was never afraid that we were going to be blown out the back door, because I made sure that our backside was covered.
Mm, and that's a very smart thing to do, because as a variable rate and as interest rates increased, and especially on a substantial portfolio, it can really hurt the back pocket too.
Oh, well, it sounds very good at the time when you can get a variable rate now of 3.5%.
Yeah.
It's not going to stay 3.5% forevermore.
Coming up after the break, we will delve into Summer's wealth building strategy.
Okay, it's really simple. And it's so simple that the people are looking for something complicated and something that needs a university degree to interpret.
Also, hear about what habits and values she believes contributed to her property investing success.
Those personal habits are, I think, have been handed down from my parents, and I think my children also have developed a very good sense of monetary value.
Next, we'll hear how you can apply the strategy of Jan Summers to your own investment journey. Coming up, we'll learn the smart way to borrow money, how to safely use equity, and how long you should be keeping your properties for.
Okay, it's really simple. And it's so simple that the people are looking for something complicated and something that needs a university degree to interpret. It's not like trying investing in the share market and guessing derivatives. It's really simple. It's about borrowing money, buying a property, and keeping it for the long term. And it's so simple that we miss it. So it's, I guess to explain just a little bit on that, it's borrowing money with interest only, because that's going to reduce your payback amount rather than a P&I. I fix the rate to keep me able to sleep at night, and you use the equity in your own house to be able to borrow the whole lot. You don't need a deposit anymore for a property. And then when you buy a property, I'd suggest you buy median residential price, because that's the sort of property that everyone wants to buy in the first homeowners market. It's the kind of property that everyone wants to rent, and you make sure that it's in an area with a reasonably good infrastructure, not a mining town. And then the third thing is you keep it for the long term. You can renovate if you want, but don't be like we did and renovate to sell and make a quick quid. Don't sell, and you'll never have to worry about timing, because otherwise, if you're buying a property to sell, timing is really important. What's more important is time, not timing. And so that's the strategy. It's simple. Borrow and buy and keep. Don't worry about the timing. Keep it for the long term.
Now, how do you add value to an existing property? What are the best tips and tricks of investment property renovation? Jan Summers reveals.
I don't do major stuff. I don't do anything like pull out walls and reconfigure the whole house. That can be very expensive, and it doesn't necessarily add a lot of dollars. I do things like I might take off all of the cupboards from the kitchen front. And if there's any marks on the laminate, I have a little trick where I have a tradesman who supplies me with stainless steel cutouts, and I stick it on to cover up all of the bits. So the kitchen, and by the time you've replaced the catches, it finishes up looking like new. Yeah. I might get someone to paint it. I rarely paint. I'm good at painting fences, but not houses. and replace the carpet. And if you've only got a little place to start with that's just a three-bedroom, one or two-bathroom at the most, it doesn't take long. What I can't get done in a week just doesn't get done. So it's almost back to new. And then I might spend 2 days in the yard getting rid of the trees, trimming it. It doesn't take long, but any more than a week and you're wasting your time and wasting your money.
Okay. And are you doing those renovations yourself, or are you getting tradespeople?
A little bit of both. Mm. A little bit of both. I definitely get people in to do the painting and replace the carpet. I'm not into that.
Mm, yes.
Or I might be a little bit selective and only replace the carpet in a couple of rooms. But if it's anything to do with just fixing up kitchen or replacing taps and things in the bathroom, then we can do that. Mm. I'm very good at fixing up vanities, trim the whole lot with aluminium trim to hold it all together. I've turned some pretty dilapidated chipboard into are something that will hold together at least for another 5 or 6 years. So it's delaying the inevitable. Yeah. If you can delay putting in a new kitchen for another 10 years then and make it respectable and clean, then that's a good renovation.
Okay. So then I guess we call it dumps, which is mean that somebody's really gone through and done really major damage to it. Would you be interested in getting those kind of properties, or would you just go past those and just stick with those ones that you just need?
Look, I'd have to identify the perception of a dump is in the eye of the beholder. Now, if I looked at an old Queenslander and the weatherboard is completely rotten on the outside and it badly needs a paint, that's quite major, and it's extremely expensive. So I weigh up in my own mind, how much is that going to need? And while old Queenslanders are great to live in and they've got great character about them, they don't necessarily make the greatest investment because of the maintenance issue. But if you can do the maintenance yourself, well, that's fine. But they do create major problems along the way, and some people love that.
It is undeniable that certain personal habits make a person better at property investing. Generally, we perceive these as goal orientation, passion, and commitment. So, what habits or values does Summers believe contribute to a property investing success?
Okay. Of later years, I've probably been able to stick my neck out, but I make sure that everything I do is covered. I'm willing to have a go, and I'm willing to learn. I think that's really important. But I think it's also important that I have quite simple tastes. I don't buy extravagant cars, clothes, jewellery, anything. I mean, we could afford a Rolls Royce, we could eat at upmarket restaurants every night, but I'm quite happy with my old second-hand car, and I have steak and chips probably once a fortnight at the local pub. But it doesn't mean that you have to go without to buy investment property. It just means you have to be very careful in managing your money and to not be extravagant. So those personal habits are, I think, have been handed down from my parents, and I think my children also have developed a very good sense of monetary value.
As the author of one of the best-selling Australian series on property investment and wealth building, what books does Jan Summers recommend you read to help you in your property investment journey?
Well, back in the 80s when I was learning a lot and learning about spending habits, I was a great fan of Noel Whittaker. I know he's now steered into investment planning, but he has a very great philosophy on why some people do become wealthy and others don't. And he thinks it's back down towards their own spending habits. And I did a conference with him in the early 90s. I think he had a couple of books out, or I had a couple of books out, and I had a discussion with him at this conference where we were both guest speakers. And he said, for many people, the best investment that they could possibly make is a concrete box buried in the backyard, where you can only put your money in through a little slot, but you can't get it out easily. I thought, oh, that's a strange thing to say. He's just written a book on investing, but he says the biggest problem that people have is that they get their mitts on money and it's at their fingertips, and it's a recipe for disaster because they'll always spend what they have. But that's also why property is so good, because it forces you to contribute to a loan, and that's money that you probably would have frittered away. So I still think, getting back to basics, I think sometimes the property investment will look after itself. I could probably summarise what to do in the borrow, buy and keep as a formula. But developing some good money habits is very good. And I couldn't go past Noel Whittaker's book back then, For Making Money Made Simple.
Thanks to the great advice of Jan Summers, I'm sure many of you have learned a great deal. Do you have any more questions for her? Or do you wish to buy her books? If so...
Well, the books are still through bookstores, but visiting our website at www.summersoft, that's SOMERSOFT.com.au, if they're interested in the software. I mean, I've talked about property being affordable, borrow, buy and keep, and the software shows people how a $500,000 property might only cost $50 a week, which is the equivalent of a couple of trips to McDonald's through the week.
That's really good.
Also, Summers mentions her property investing software that she developed for her customers, which takes a lot of the guesswork out. She shares how it works and some of the benefits.
Well, okay, it started out as an Excel spreadsheet, which I put together to say, I put it together in the 80s to say, well, why does property is costing me so little now? And I put this spreadsheet together to understand the difference between a principal and an interest-only loan primarily. And I could work out that if I had a P&I loan, it was going to cost me $100 a week, or if it was just an interest-only, it was going to cost me $50 a week. So the template is there as an Excel spreadsheet. And of course, my husband was a computing programmer. I said to him, I said, well, you can write this in a piece of software, can't you? And over several years, he did. And over many years, he's added to it and added to it. So it enables people to put in a property for, say, $500,000 or whatever it is. It works out what all the stamp duty and all your purchase costs are, et cetera, et cetera. You can put the rent in. You can put what your wages are. It does a lot of general guesswork on what the depreciations will be for things in the property. And the bottom line tells you, hey, this property is going to cost you $50 a week. Now, if I buy a different property, one that's perhaps new and might get some more tax deductions, how much will that cost me? And so it's very good for comparing properties along the way and understanding how it works. Should I buy a unit? Should I buy an old house? Should I buy a new house? And you can put in those variables and get an answer that is quite a definitive answer, because it's there in dollars and cents, not this might be better and that might be better.
That's really good. Does it update automatically for, say, depreciation schedules and taxes and all those kind of things as well?
Yes, it's not an accounting program, so it's not something that you'd punch in the figures and then hand your accountant at the end of the year. But, for example, you're able to put in, if your $500,000 property is a new property and you get depreciation or capital allowance because it's new, you can just put in the figure that, yes, this property has got I've paid $500,000 for, it's got a $300,000 building on it that's brand new, and it can be written off at 2.5% or whatever the capital allowance is at this point in time. And so you get an instant answer for all of the variables that you do change.
Fantastic.
And there's several versions. There's the investor's version and then one for professionals. But the investor's version just allows people to get an instant answer instead of wondering, now, how much is this property really going to cost me? And it teaches people to look past the $500,000 mark and look at the bottom line, which might only be $40 or $50 a week.
That's really good. And is that a software that you download, or is that something you use online?
No, when I say you download it, we actually send you a copy. So you purchase it online and... Yep. And we give you a code that unlocks what you've downloaded. And we've probably sold thousands and thousands over the years, and the feedback has just been enormous. And the letters, I have filing cabinets here full of thank yous from people of stories that they've told me, which resulted in another book, a story by story book.
Not only did she create a property software, Summers also created a fantastic community, which has grown into thousands and thousands of members over the years.
It started out when we started getting hundreds of phone calls a day on, should I buy this or should I buy that, and what's the best? And I didn't really want to get into the consulting sides of things. It was, I think you need to know too much about a person's situation before you can start giving that kind of advice, and I didn't really want to get into the advice side. So we set up a forum so that like-minded investors could talk to each other about this, these kinds of things. Now, what if I do this? Or should I buy here? Or should I buy in a mining town? Or what do you think? And what do you think? And so it attracted a lot of people that could discuss things with each other, and then so they're virtually supporting each other rather than using us as as the mentor in the background.
As the forum grew so popular, it became unmanageable.
Oh, yes. Literally thousands and thousands of members on that Summersoft forum, which unfortunately has come to an end because it was so popular and tens of thousands, we needed to have different and better software, and it became Property Chat that Simon is now looking after for us.
Thank you again to Jan Summers for joining us today at Property Investory. We've certainly learnt a lot from her decades of experience. If you want to hear about Jan Summers' journey from school teacher to mother to multi-million dollar property investor, and finally to one of the most famous and reputable sources of education on property investment in Australia, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar Jan Summers and select that episode to listen and learn more about her story. You can also get the full transcript and show notes on our website.